When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
How far would you go to save someone you loved? Would you spend all of your money trying to find the best treatment? Would you sacrifice a part of your very soul? When a caretaker performs what's supposed to be an ancient healing ritual on her friend's ailing grandmother, she unknowingly unleashes a terrifying and powerful demon, an entity that claimed to be one of the seven princes of hell. Will all those involved have their lives be torn apart as the malevolent demon haunts and torments their every waking moments? Or can they somehow be saved? This is the untold story of the Deborah Moffitt case, also known as the Deadly Haunting or Mr. Entity case, which took place in California. And this is truly one you don't want to enjoy with the lights off. The following story has been sourced from Deborah Moffitt's own words, as well as several outside resources, to try and form the most cohesive timeline possible. Not all names were able to be found, but I've done my best to provide the most accurate story that I can. Our story begins in 1984, when the grandmother-in-law of another woman, who will become integral to our story, a woman named Deborah Moffitt, suffered a terrible and debilitating stroke. As a result of this unfortunate occurrence, she required around-the-clock care. To compensate for this, the family all chipped in and pooled together enough money to go ahead and hire a caretaker for her, someone who they trusted. A nearby neighbor and friend of the family, a middle-aged lady from Guatemala named Juanita. This arrangement was both a godsend for Juanita as well as the family. It allowed Juanita to stay in the United States on her work visa and earn a nice living while providing aid to her friends. And it allowed the family's dear loved one to be taken care of by someone who they knew and trusted. Although this is somewhat controversial, this woman was an avid practitioner of what's known as Santeria. Santeria is an African diasporic religion that developed in Cuba during the late 19th century. It arose through a process of syncretism between the traditional Yoruba religion of West Africa and the Catholic form of Christianity and spiritualism. Offerings to the Erika or various gods often included fruit, liquor, flowers, and sacrificed animals. In the months to come, Grandma's recovery was not going well. If anything, unfortunately, she was getting worse. Much worse. Each day her state seemed to deteriorate more. Worried about her friends and their grandmother, as well as her own well-being, thinking that perhaps if Grandma passed away that she would no longer be able to reside in California due to the loss of her job and the high cost of living and having to compete in the job market to keep her work visa, Juanita decided to take matters into her own hands. She decided to try an ancient Santeria healing spell in hopes that it would allow everyone involved, but especially for Grandma, to do better. However, this ritual would prove to be anything but helpful. Grandma, in fact, would not get better. Weeks following the ritual, she would ultimately pass away. Not only did she pass away and her family was devastated, but Juanita would indeed lose her job as a result. I tried to dig to uncover any and all details as far as what happened to Juanita, but I was unable to find anything. My best guess is that perhaps with the loss of her caretaker position, she either couldn't afford to live in the area anymore, and/or she went back to her native country. But those are just speculation on my part. Deborah and her husband Bill would inherit the home, and in due time would move into it following Grandma's funeral. At first, all would be rather normal and quiet within the house. But that would ultimately change with the birth of Debbie and Bill's first child in 1987, their first son. Bill was a big sports memorabilia collector and had a particular spare bedroom dedicated to his hobby. He was especially fond of bobbleheads, particularly baseball bobbleheads. It's important to know that they kept this room locked at all times, and Bill was the only person who had a key to enter it. One seemingly normal day, Deborah, Bill, and a friend who lived nearby were headed into the house to show the friend just how extensive the collection had become. My best guess is that this gentleman was also very much into sports as well. As they opened the door and began to walk into the room, they were shocked by what they saw. All of the bobbleheads on the toys had been removed, from the ones on the shelves to the walls and cabinets, and all of them had been laid together in the center of the floor to form a triangle of sorts. Not only was Bill upset and shocked by this, but the group wasn't sure of what to make of this happening. They somehow thought that someone had managed to break into the room to play a prank on them, but as to why they would have played such a prank on them, and who would have done it, was uncertain at best. Following this happening, only more bizarre things began to manifest. But as they typically do, these manifestations started small. Grandma had been a very religious lady, and in the room that was hers, she kept a bedside table with several icons, those of which contained both Jesus and the Virgin Mary. In honor of her, they had kept that table and those icons in the same place that she had left them. One morning, as Deborah was cleaning house, she noticed that a pair of her husband's briefs were draped over the biggest statue of Jesus on the very same table. Not only did her husband not change in this room, but she knew how close Bill was to his grandmother, and how he would never have done anything to disrespect her or her things. Thinking that somehow it must have been an accident, and unnerved at the strangeness yet again, the couple was unsure of what they were dealing with. And not making it a priority or jumping to conclusions, since they were dealing with a newborn, I can't say I blame them, because that's always going to be at the forefront of your mind. As soon as their son was roughly a month old, yet another weird thing would occur. The couple this evening had been out at a relative's house for dinner, and as food was ate, laughs were had, and dusk turned into night. They would say their goodbyes and begin traversing the winding roads back home. Upon arrival, they placed their keys in their door and stepped inside of their house to begin to wind down. They flicked on their living room light switch, and as the lights illuminated, they would see a bizarre, enigmatic symbol drawn on the wall. Describing it later, Deborah would refer to it as something that she had never really seen before, like a series of triangles with tails. But yet again, a triangle was involved. As they surveyed the house, they noticed that the symbols weren't just on the first wall in the living room. They were on all of the walls, in what would turn out to be the entire house, each of them appearing to have been drawn in some kind of a charcoal-like substance. Bill and Debbie again weren't sure of what to make of this, so they went to the logical headspace that perhaps somehow someone was pranking them yet again, or they were breaking into their house, both of which were unnerving at best, and both of which didn't make any sense. The pranking because they didn't really have a relationship with anyone like that, let alone they hadn't given access to their house to anyone else, and with someone intruding into their home, all of their doors and windows were locked, and none of their belongings or valuables would be missing. It would take several hours, but they would eventually settle and fall asleep this very night, despite the confusion and now fear that someone was truly messing with them. 5 days following this night, as Bill rearranged his sports room, Deborah had taken up the task of cleaning the living room. On one of their walls, there was a long shelf filled with little keepsakes and knickknacks. She had glanced at the shelf while sweeping the floor, and then again looked back at it. And as she would describe later, it was like as if in the blink of an eye, every single item on that shelf was turned backwards. Upon coming out of his sports room, Bill was told by Deborah what had taken place, but at the time refused to believe it, saying that she couldn't have seen it right to begin with. However, Debbie knew what she had seen and just how impossible it would have been for them to all be facing backwards, but she was the only one who ever touched them. But despite trying to approach the situations logically, these illogical happenings would only continue. 1 week later, the two would arrive home to discover a lamp sitting in the middle of their living room, with nothing else in the home out of place, and nothing being wrong with any of the doors or windows. Debbie began to think that perhaps something was taking place that they couldn't understand. Bill harbored a deep fear of the paranormal, and with these realizations, somewhat went into a state of denial, utterly refusing to believe that something even remotely close as such could be taking place, let alone to them. The lamp would be placed back on the shelf where it was supposed to be, and following this, the two headed into the kitchen as Bill continued to try and rationalize and come up with excuses as to what was happening to them. After having a brief discussion and without hearing so much as the smallest of sounds, the couple would re-emerge into their living room after roughly 2 to 3 minutes and would be shaken to their core. Before their very eyes, they would find all of their furniture rearranged and stacked, one piece on top of the other. It was as if the entire room had been shifted upside down, but all within mere minutes, and essentially in dead silence. At this point, there was no way to deny that they were indeed dealing with something beyond their normal realm of comprehension. But with this realization, the two had completely different thoughts about the matter. Deborah was apprehensive yet fascinated as to what could be happening. And Bill, surprisingly, was done denying what was taking place and was ready to move immediately and leave everything behind. Debbie would end up placing the furniture back to normal in the living room. Bill didn't even want to be inside of the house, so he stood outside. He would then refuse to have anything to do with the activity from this point onward, essentially heading back into denial. To Deborah, the feeling wasn't a malevolent first. She saw it as almost a game of sorts. Whether this would prove to be detrimental or not later is up to you. With these feelings, she would begin to try and communicate with the presence daily, asking it to move things around to prove that it was there. And incredibly, it, whatever it was, would oblige. This action would begin a cat and mouse game that went on for roughly a week or so, until one day, it randomly ceased. Eventually, due to Bill's lack of comfort, the couple would purchase and move into the house next door and would keep their old home as a rental property for several years. This decision would result in an eventual revolving door of tenants, some of them staying a year or so, but most of them just staying several months and leaving without giving a reason. It's important to note here that Bill would actually mention that the property could possibly be haunted, but most people laughed at the idea. Perhaps it was the times. Perhaps people back then weren't as open-minded to the world of the paranormal as they are now. After several years of renting out their home, Bill and Debbie and several other surviving family members decided that they would sell their current homes and rental properties and purchase one large home and share the space as one big family. Once this was tackled, and after several days of moving their own belongings to the new home, on the final day at their old house, something peculiar happened. Deborah and a relative were gathering the final boxes from a room in the back of the house, when suddenly they heard what they described as an explosion come from the kitchen. Dropping the boxes and bolting to the origin of the noise to see just what had happened, the two ladies were left speechless. All of the cabinets, the countertops, everything had been ripped from the walls, and pieces of them now lay all over the floor. Before they could begin to process what had just taken place, they would hear another loud explosion, but this time it came from the bedroom that they had just ran from. Running back there, they again would be astonished. Every window in the back bedroom had been blown out with absolutely no explanation. Shards of glass littered the carpet and covered the final boxes they sought to move out. Wasting no time, Debbie grabbed the relative by the arm, and the two fled to the car, leaving the final boxes behind. They would leave the property as quickly as they could. It was within these moments that Deborah now knew that whatever the force was that they had been dealing with was not benevolent, and in fact, seemed hostile. Trying to come to terms with what had just happened, shaking with fear, she drove to the new house, and the two would spend the rest of the day trying to forget what had just happened. For the first several days, everything seemed to be quiet and calm in the new house, as the family all together unpacked and got settled into their new life together. The dynamic consisted of Deborah and Bill in the master bedroom downstairs, and Bill's mother and father upstairs in the other master bedroom. Two other relatives lived there as well, but I wasn't able to find additional details as to their exact relation or the time frame in which they ended up staying or leaving. But sometimes it's people that are haunted, not places. So yet again, the Moffats would find themselves plagued by the same malevolent force that had previously stalked them from the shadows. The entity, like a feral beast who had simply been wounded, had nursed those wounds and seemed hell-bent on revenge. With the reappearance of this malevolent force, certain members of the family were opposed to seeking assistance, while others felt that it was necessary to do. Those opposing believed that they would be made a mockery of, considered crazy, and dismissed, leaving their reputations in shambles. But together, they all believed that this problem was way too far out of their scope of normalcy to be able to tackle themselves. As the family stood divided against one another, the entity began to further isolate them individually. Not only could they certainly not have any guests over for fear that they too would be affected, but wherever they seemed to go, it would follow. It continuously made them so uncomfortable that they soon quit going places altogether, except for their essentials. For example, on one occasion, Deborah and Bill had been at one of Bill's friends' homes for dinner. They would have a nice time, but this would be all too short-lived. Upon their return to the house, on the kitchen table was the friend's wallet. They had just been inside of his house, and as one might imagine, this would be more than enough to chill someone to the bone. It was as if the entity was telling them to stop, or else someone else might get hurt. The Moffats, now beside themselves with fear, were also worried just how they would explain to their friend why they had his wallet, or just what he would say or think. In an effort to try and seek some sort of help, Deborah was able to convince most of her family to go and visit a local but well-known psychologist to make sure it wasn't some kind of mass hysteria, or that someone, herself included, hadn't somehow convinced themselves and everyone else that something paranormal was taking place when it wasn't. The psychologist, whose name was never disclosed, was based out of Rancho Cucamonga, California, and was apprehensive at first. Who can blame them? But after much explaining and meeting with the members of the family together and separately, the psychologist would come to the conclusion that something strange was indeed taking place, something that they couldn't help with. Unable to assist the family further, they told them that they needed to seek the help of a parapsychologist, a religious institution, or some other party that studies these kinds of things. So following the psychologist's advice, with most of Bill's family being religious, Catholic specifically, they would seek the help of the church that they attended. The church agreed to help them and would send a priest to bless their home. And after several weeks after their meeting, an older priest would arrive at their house. Upon crossing the threshold of the home and into the foyer, the priest would take out his holy water and begin to sprinkle it on the walls around him and make the sign of the cross towards the hallway. Oddly, though, he refused to go any further into the home. When asked, "Aren't you supposed to bless every room?" the priest would rebuttal, No, this should be more than enough. I have to go now." In further effort to get him to do what he was supposed to do, the family explained all of what had been taking place. The priest would make eye contact with Deborah and say, "Women, when they get older, they tend to get a little crazy. Now excuse me, I have to go." Then without another word, he exited the door and left in his vehicle. The family noticed he had seemed unnerved or slightly scared while he was at the house, but they were also totally flabbergasted at his odd response to them and their legitimate attempts to seek assistance. Thus, they were again left without any real help, believing the blessing to be rather subpar. Bill's mother, Lee, who was the most religious out of all of them, was simply crushed at the church's response and never truly seemed the same following this incident. The entity seemed to latch onto this and began to feed upon her negativity following what had taken place. It began to torment her day in and day out. Some examples of what it would do to her would be to destroy her belongings. It would make her shoes disappear, as in one shoe would go missing from a pair. It destroyed her purse, wallet, credit cards, and licenses multiple times. And it would hide things from her if it didn't destroy them. It was as if to say that I'm the one that's in control, and you'll own things only if I say that you can. Having very bad eyesight most of her life, the creature would take Lee's glasses away from her or smash them. And while she was unable to see, it would manifest itself as a large, terrifying, foreboding figure, which without her glasses, to Lee, seemed like a massive black mist. Then it would often touch or abuse her. The demon also began to have a peculiar obsession with knives. Knives began appearing stuck in the walls and frighteningly under chairs. So if someone sat down, they would greatly injure themselves. And these knives, stranger still, were not the family's knives. They had absolutely no idea where they came from. The intensity of the knife situation would escalate to the point to where they were being placed upright under pillows, and Lee again seemed to bear the brunt of the abuse. The Moffats were seemingly beat down into a corner, and as they sat there, they collectively wondered just how they could defend themselves against something that they couldn't see. Just how could they defeat an entity that shouldn't exist? The torture would continue for the family as a whole, but it was being done as if the demon was wanting to communicate some kind of message. One day, an unmistakable sign would appear, indeed communicating, the first in what would become many. The entity began to write on various mirrors throughout the house, and soap. Its first message appearing to Lee, saying, "Talk to me." And this particular message appeared shortly after the family had come home from getting groceries together, trying to regain some sense of normalcy. At first, wanting to make sure it wasn't one of the family members playing a trick on the others, which would be pretty horrible at this point, to be honest, they cleaned the mirror thoroughly, and then everyone convened in the bedroom together, saying that if there was additional writing on the mirror following them cleaning it, in the next several minutes, then the event is indeed real. After approximately 15 minutes of waiting, they reluctantly re-entered the bathroom to find the words, "Nini, don't go into the attic," written on the mirror. Upon reading this, Lee froze in her tracks. There was only one person who ever called her that nickname, or was even aware of it, and that was her long-deceased sister. From here, the days would turn into nights, and the messages would continue, becoming more sadistic, controlling, and abusive. For the next year, the family would be held hostage by what they now believed to be a demonic entity. The messages were more or less commands or insults, and the spirit wouldn't answer any of their questions in response to them. It got to the point that when, if they sought to go places for any reason, they had to ask permission. Otherwise, they would have car issues or damage, such as broken windshields, headlights, or even engine failure. Eventually, out of frustration, Bill's father would ask the name of the entity in hopes that they could figure out just what it was and what it wanted and why it tormented them all in an effort to put a stop to it. And upon asking, they all would finally receive an answer. There, scribbled on the mirror, was the name, Prince. And following them, receiving this name, they would hear a commotion coming from all over the house below them. Rushing down the stairs, they would find many of their items and furniture broken in pieces, and several symbols scribbled on the walls and floors. The symbol, as vaguely mentioned before, involved triangles and small offshoot characters. The shape over time would be scribbled, carved, and even burned into walls, floors, and furniture within the home. Following this event, each day seemed to mirror the last. It almost always started with the family having to put the home back together. Everything would be in complete disarray upon them waking up, each and every morning. And wherever they went, it went. If they went out to eat, even upon asking permission, and they would return, the name tag of the waiter or waitress would be on the table. And one time, a massive bite was taken out of the mother-in-law's steak, just mere seconds after she received it, with no rational origin as to how it happened. This state of utter imprisonment and constant battle with an enemy that they couldn't see led the family to seek additional help to try and free themselves of the hell that they now lived in. They would go through a long list of reputable people and organizations to try and escape, but nothing seemed to work. Some of these included Lloyd Auerbach and his connections to various paranormal societies. One such society consisted of Christopher Chacon, another well-known name in the paranormal world, and his investigation team. They were unable to make sense of the situation, and ultimately couldn't help the Moffitts. The Moffitts would reach out to various religious organizations of differing faiths. They tried having magicians come out, and they would even make contact with Thelma Moss, who would send Carrie Gaynor out to investigate. The very same Thelma Moss and Carrie Gaynor that were involved in the San Pedro haunting, as well as the entity, or better known as the Doris Bither case. And yet no one could get rid of it. No amount of blessings, rituals, or investigations seemed to work. They would have shamans out, Wiccans, and even the Warrens, and still no one could help them. As the years trickled by ever slowly, agonizingly, things had not improved. Rather, it had become so violent and dangerous within the house that the entire family, both Bill's parents, Bill and Deborah, and their son, were all sleeping in the lower living room together and would not separate for fear of what would happen. The demon, known as Prince, had taken over the entire upstairs. One night, Deborah, on behalf of her mother-in-law, decided to risk it and head upstairs to grab some medication that had been left behind that she desperately needed. upon opening the door and walking into this now claimed domain, every fiber of her being was telling her to turn around and run. Persisting, she made her way past all the broken furniture and utter chaos to where the medication was. And after grasping the bottle in her palm, turning around to head back downstairs, she heard a low, growling noise behind her, originating from the attic. There, in the flesh, was the disembodied head of a grotesque creature. Grayish in appearance, with the blackest, most soulless eyes imaginable, a twisted horn emerged from its temple and up over its head. This caused an involuntary scream to erupt from Deborah's mouth, straight from the depths of her soul. She then, with everything she had, ran back downstairs. She believed that this indeed was the entity known as Prince's true form. Things from here continue to go downhill as they do, and would escalate in intensity and torture. Lee, one morning, went to grab something from the pantry in the kitchen, a place for the most part where they felt safe in, since it was on the ground level of the house. As she opened the door and stepped into the walk-in pantry to grab the item that she was after, suddenly, behind her, the door slammed shut. She then felt invisible hands grab her throat and squeeze, picking her up, her feet leaving the floor and dangling. As she struggled to breathe, feeling as if it was the end, when everything began to go black, the hands suddenly released and she collapsed down to the floor. Her husband would be the first to rush to her aid, and she would be hysterical after coming back to consciousness. Prince clearly had the power to take a human life, or so it seemed, but chose not to. Was this because it wanted to feed upon misery versus taking a soul, or for some other reason? Did demons perhaps have rules they had to abide by? Deborah had finally reached her breaking point. She stormed into the upstairs bathroom and demanded answers from Prince. She told the being that the family was no longer to be touched, that they would respect its space if it would respect theirs. And surprisingly, she began to receive replies on the mirror in the same fashion as the entity had always communicated, by writing on it. Prince said that he would no longer bother any other member of the family, but that Lee had been promised to him many moons ago, and that he had come to collect. Deborah would ask the creature to elaborate, and for the next hour, the entity would write on the mirror. Deborah would erase the writing, wait, go back, read, and repeat, until the full story had been told. Not wanting to allow Prince to have any sort of power over her, Deborah decided to start referring to him as Mr. Entity, essentially leaving him a nameless face, but with a respectable title, as they had agreed upon. Here I wanted to mention a few of the smaller details I uncovered. From the time of Grandma's old house till now, the family did also experience paranormal manifestations that we commonly come across, such as putrid odors, knocking, and banging throughout the home, all with no rational origin, and rarely seen, but somewhat indicative of a more powerful entity, they also experienced an infestation. Some people experience insects from what I've come across. The Moffitts, however, had a terrible rat problem, but one that came out of nowhere and then disappeared roughly 2 weeks later, again with no cause. Another disturbing thing that Mr. Entity had taken to doing was ending the lives of the family's dogs if it didn't get what it wanted. There are more details on what happened to several of the pets, but the details are gruesome, and if I've learned anything from my prior videos, it's that it's really not necessary to include include this kind of information. I just wanted to say that it happened, and it happened more than once in this case. Oftentimes, the ending to these kinds of cases can be anticlimactic, and this one, despite how incredible of a story it is no exception. After 6 agonizing years, with dozens of seasoned paranormal investigators, religious leaders, shamans, occult magicians, and more, assisting the Moffats with the demon known as Prince, no relief was provided for all of those years. Prince continued to plague their lives until one day the entity simply was no longer there. Following the creature's departure, Debbie, Bill, and the family would destroy lots of photos, but keep some in storage, but stored in the attic. They would also for years stop speaking about what they had endured for fear of whatever it was would come back. But thankfully, for whatever reason, it never did. Debbie and Bill would go on to raise their family and eventually move on, with Debbie becoming an author and spiritual advisor, not only to assist others who may have experienced something similar, but to also share her extensive knowledge and hellish waking life that her and her family endured under the reign of Prince. I'll be leaving links to her books on this video, as well as in the description, because they're certainly worth checking out, as well as several other resources I used to research this case. As we conclude our story, as always, I'd like to give some of my thoughts I've had while researching this very unhinged but perplexing case. Was this spirit demonic? A familiar of sort? A djinn, as we'll see in a moment? Or perhaps something pretending to be more than what it was? We will never have definitive answers for these questions, but in my opinion, Prince, or Mr. Entity, whatever it was certainly incredibly powerful, especially given the destruction it was alleged to have perpetrated, given the descriptions given by Debbie in various interviews, her own books, and photos, both provided by her. And again, in my opinion, the entity was certainly demonic. I think true demonic hauntings are not only extremely rare, but incredibly dangerous, with the spirits having the ability to cause tangible physical and mental harm to all involved. Demons aren't all powerful, but they are more intelligent than we are, and can foresee things that we simply cannot. When explaining this story as to why it sought and tormented Lee so hard, that apparently she had been promised many moons or years ago, this is what leads me to believe that perhaps someone in their lineage promised their descendants in exchange for something, whether it was money, fame, or what have you. Perhaps the entity had finally come to collect its dead, the soul that was bartered during said exchange. Now, I don't think that it was a human spirit pretending to be something it wasn't. A prince of hell, I'm not totally convinced of. But most hauntings, the beings don't have half the ability of what Prince supposedly did. Many years following the events of the Moffat family haunting, during an interview with the late great Art Bell, Debbie would speak with a guest who seemingly identified the symbol that Prince, or Mr. Entity, had supposedly used. It was a symbol he had come across during his time in the army while in Afghanistan. Further investigation revealed on his behalf that this symbol was that of Iblis, which is known as a jinn from the Quran. It's known as the leader of the devils in Islam. Iblis was thrown out of heaven after he refused to prostrate himself before Adam. It's also known as the father of bitterness. This certainly would explain the power behind Prince, that's for sure. All around, this case is incredible, perplexing, and terrifying. Taking things at Deborah Moffat's word, I can only vaguely relate to just how terrible her and her family's experience dealing with this must have been. And one thing is for certain: whether Prince was indeed a prince of hell as it claimed to be, or just a very powerful entity, it certainly tormented this family, a as if they had been sent to the seventh circle themselves. Thank you guys so much for your patience with this video. The research on this one took much longer than expected, and I also had some live things come up and slowed things down a little bit further. But if you enjoyed this video, please give it a like, subscribe, and comment what your thoughts are down below. Don't forget to check out today's sponsor. You can also check out my Patreon and YouTube membership programs to help further support me. And other than that, guys, I love all of you. I hope you're doing fantastic. And I will see you very soon with yet another brand new video. Until next time, this has been Cody here at Mystery Archives. Remember to stay safe out there and take care.